Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Wilber, the board. Also back, I won't say by popular demand, but it is by popular demand, but the holiday kind of guy, he's a traveler now, Mr. Brendan Cornan.
Good morning.
Favorite on the show. S&P futures up a whole 25 cents. Dow futures unchanged. NASDAQ futures up 17 as we turned the bus around yesterday. We were pretty well down in the morning and ended up up on the day. Had probably a 150-point turn in the NASDAQ. Pretty serious turn. As the I'm thinking the Fed pouring money in is now going over any kind of a risk we have with Iran, because it's hard to quantify this stuff, though. Mm-hmm. You can't just sell away because, you know, you have the constant chatter that anybody who's ever sold at an impending crisis in the last 10, 12 years has basically been an idiot and lived to regret it. Problem is you can't trade yesterday's market. You got to trade today's.
Mm-hmm.
Therein lies a problem for those kinds of utterances by people, yet they doesn't seem to stop them. It's like I always think it's, well, Brendan is a 100 marathon kind of guy?
Yep, 100 marathon kind of guy.
And I'm going to say that in some races in your lifetime, there were issues with lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And they told people to stop running for a while or something. And yet,
some people did, some people didn't.
But probably nobody got hit.
No, they did not.
So
there have been some few strikes, but in the race where I've been involved in, people who took the risk of continuing on did not get hit.
Yet I would doubt whether you, especially if you're a registered person, like some of these people, I'll be nice, people are, for you to go on TV and say to ignore the next lightning warning would be pretty... it's one thing for me to say, if you hung in through the long-term debt crisis of whatever year that was, 1998, or if you hung in through, the Argentine debt crisis or something, whatever year that was, you ended up being okay. It's quite different than saying, screw this Iranian thing, stay in there, buy more. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It may turn out to be that way. We sure hope so, right? But it's still, to give that kind of advice is a little bit.
If we knew the answer, then we'd all be very rich and wouldn't be working.
Well, I mean, I've played at golf courses where the horns went off, and I never stayed out there yet. I don't know if anybody ever got whacked except at the Western Open. How many years ago was that?
Mm-hmm.
With Lee Trevino got hit, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Tell you what, I've been out there a couple of times when it felt pretty eerie, where you could just almost tell that your hair was going up on your neck.
I mean, I've had that happen running in the lakefront, but, you know, again, when I hear there's lightning or see lightning in the area, I call my runners off and have them seek shelter until the lightning has passed and then back to the store right away.
You know what's weird on golf courses, just as an aside, back in the day when virtually everybody walked, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you went to a course like Hickory Hills or Silver Lake, virtually every, the holes were kind of all next to each other. I'm going to say you weren't more than 200-300 yards from a house that was grounded. I mean, there'd be a thing where you could go stand under it,
mm-hmm.
and there were steel pipes, you know, into the ground.
But you don't think that was by design?
Yeah, what I'm saying. But now they assume everybody's in a cart.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're out there and you don't have one, you're a long way from anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, there really is no shelter. You know, you go sit on a tree, that's not the best thing.
Mm-hmm.
But anywho, so as a man who's been watching the news, what do you make of all this stuff? I mean, we've had, you know, people from every different walk of life, and it seems to be the summation is that the guy from Iran was not exactly liked here or in Iran. Yet it's an amazing escalation step up. I'm just kind of paraphrasing what we've heard from people.
Well, I'm not sure that he was not liked in Iran. It seemed like he was liked by quite a few people, both in Iran and Iraq, but he also had quite a few enemies who were there. And but it is an escalation, and I think it depends on whether there really is a credible threat. And, you know, which side of the line you fall on depends on how trustworthy you believe this administration is in trying to gin up a reason for reelection, or if there really was a serious threat that this guy was involved in planning that was also imminent. Because if not, then you get the question of whether we are assassinating foreign leaders on foreign soil, which has not been what has been permitted through diplomatic policy for years and years.
Right. Well, Margaret Brennan was pinning Pompeo, and I love the fact these guys, they go out there and they really don't really have a story, it doesn't look like it to me. And she says, okay, so there was an imminent threat. Well, yeah. She goes, okay, now he's dead. Is the imminent threat over?
I saw that, and yeah, he didn't answer.
He didn't answer.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, there was no, and I think there was no, I mean, he's the guy that was going around plotting all the stuff, everything they did, evidently, mm-hmm, in other countries where they would give people money and do stuff to do bad stuff. He was involved in that. Was his shtick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Fari claims that in the home ground, he was also in charge of rounding up people that didn't like there. So
mm-hmm,
the population didn't like him.
Although they're mourning his death.
Well, that's, I think you have to do that.
But is that the government doing that?
I think that's the government doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that'd be my guess. So I don't, you know, he's, but yeah, I mean, I just, we've been talking for a couple of days. I don't know what the rules of engagements are anymore, and I don't know what it's like to be, nor do I want to know, by the way. I mean, I'd like to know, I'm not so sure I'd want to be there. What's it like in Iraq? I mean, or Syria? Everybody's got all these groups of idiots running around,
mm-hmm,
and everybody's paying somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys they're paying.
And it seems like the alliances shift from day to day.
Yeah. I mean, what, does anybody in Iraq have a job? I mean, they had some guy on the other day, he goes, the last thing we want is Iran and the U.S. to have a proxy war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like we're dying to do that, or somebody is here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean, you know, I just.
Well, I don't think that there's going to be a war the way that we think of it as conventional war, because the Iranian forces cannot stand up to the American forces. However, you know, you have to look back over history to see what happens when a superior military force like the United States goes against a country like Iran. You know, I mean, we can look at our own recent history in Vietnam. We can look at how the United States was formed. We can look at the Irish in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. When people are fighting for their homeland versus somebody who's coming in fighting for a mission or for somebody else's beliefs, it usually doesn't work out that well. It's usually a war of attrition. I think there'll be a lot more in the way of things like IEDs and guerrilla warfare, if they still use the term guerrilla warfare, to counteract the forces of the superior military force.
I mean, it'll be fought in somebody else's property, which is always no good.
Well, that's what it looks like here, that at least Iraq may be the battleground, which for the Iranians and for the United States. And that could be one of the reasons why the Iraqis want the United States military out of their country.
Well, we're going to have an election here, and I don't know how Trump feels his normal chances would be, but there's no doubt in Iran that those guys are unpopular.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have been, yeah.
Yeah, so they would love to have, and Putin pretty much did the same thing when he was, mm-hmm, really getting unpopular, when he grabbed Crimea, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, this is out of the playbook. Now, how much you think our guys are in that playbook or not, I mean, I'd rather not accuse them of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously in their playbook. See, I don't know how you trust them to act rationally, let alone, then it's a question of how well you trust our guys to act rationally, mm-hmm, but... You know, it's funny, for the first time across maybe some, I'll use the term party lines, in the last couple of days, a lot of people that are, I'll say, over 60, really equate this with, wait a minute, we were given a line of crap about Vietnam, we're given a line of crap about Afghanistan, are we getting another line of crap?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the latest last night was, no matter what they vote in Iraq, we're not leaving.
Mm-hmm.
What's that all about?
Well, without getting paid a lot of money for the military base that we put up there.
What I'm saying, I don't get the logic here. Sometimes I like to act like, you know, I'm sitting on the moon and from Alpha Centauri, like listening to the shows here.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to make head or tail. Let me get this straight. You invade a country. You put up an airfield because you feel like Stan.
Mm-hmm.
When they say get the hell out, you want to get paid by the airfield? I mean, the reason why we're there is because we invaded them.
That's right.
So where's the logic of, I'd like to get paid, obviously, if we spent the dough, but where's the logic? We can't leave because we have stuff here now. Where does that come from?
Are you asking me as a Republican stalwart or as a Democratic stalwart?
I'm asking you as somebody, as if you were somebody in another planet just listening in.
Oh, it doesn't make sense. There's no rationale to that.
Well, someday I'd sure like to do some stuff that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the other stuff is lasts forever. When you do stuff for all kinds of weird reasons, it comes back to bite you.
Mm-hmm.
But
how do you trade on this? I mean, getting back to your comment about
that's a good question.
How do you trade on something like this, and how do you anticipate where the markets are going to go? I mean, when Trump says we've got 52 targets that we will attack if you have strike revenge upon us, if you retaliate, I'm going to be willing to bet that at least some of those targets in the Middle East are oil supplies, depots, and refineries. What will that do for the market in the way of oil futures? What will that do for anything that comes through the Gulf of Hormuz? How do you anticipate and how do you trade on something like that, and what's the effect of it? And what would be the effect if in another week there is no retaliation, or if there is a retaliation by the Iranians and a subsequent retaliation by the United States?
Well, so far, and this is not just this crisis, this has been the last decade, you have, on the other hand, you've got the Fed pouring money into the system, propping up asset prices, deliberately and on purpose. That's a combo there. So I think what you're going to see is any time that there's going to be any kind of an action or any kind of a threat, you'll see the futures down at night. You'll see oil futures up. You'll see gold to the moon. Like we've seen, almost 2-3 days in a row now, right? So, and then as the day wears on, as stuff kind of cools during the day, nothing more happens during the trading day, you'll see the markets come back, which they've done 2 days in a row. You see oil go back down. So, cause we had Brent went through $70 last night during the night, and now we're $68.26. So we've backed off, $1.75. So there hasn't been a problem today, okay? You're constantly going to have this knee-jerk reaction to the downside when something looks like it's bad. And when it doesn't get immediately followed up, you're going to find people that are piling in and saying it's a great place to buy.
But hasn't that been the history of this administration, that they do things that say, and many people say the sky is falling right now, and then it doesn't seem to be as bad as people predicted?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing with the Chinese situation. How many times do we get news to move the market?
Mm-hmm.
But this is real news. I mean, if you're, come Sunday night, I mean, we were going to open down. Okay, and then we opened, our question is how far we opened down. And is the Fed pouring money in the next morning? And all of a sudden somebody thinks they know something and they're buying. And we come back. But unless you have, another guy get killed at 10 o'clock in the morning, people start buying in and nothing bad happened in the last 2 hours and you start creeping. And all of a sudden, if you're short, you get, you cover and you get out of the way.
Well, right? How much more room does the Fed have to keep doing this?
Well, there's the $1 million question. I'm going to say they don't have any room at all, but they would say they have all kinds of room. They're almost back up to a mass of the balance sheet the way it was. They're putting more money in the system than they did during QE3, but don't call it QE4. And so nobody seems to know why. I mean,
You don't think you know why? Don't you think it's in order to protect the interest of the administration that's currently in power, the way it would be whether it's a Democratic or Republican?
In general, but we're talking about QE3. Dan knows these numbers verbatim. QE3 was what? $20, $30 billion? Get the numbers up here. The interesting part, Brennan, is I think that when you go on national TV or for that matter a podcast, you're supposed to know something. And even if it's an area where you don't know anything, you're supposed to, try and learn something by the time the next day comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, I've heard probably 30 really smart people say, You don't have to worry about the Fed. The Fed is on hold. The Fed is anything but on hold. The Fed is pouring money into the system like I've never seen. Well, I have seen it. Every time I saw it, it was in the 70s, we had 12% money supply growth in the early 70s, and look where that got us.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so now we're 11, we're 10-6, pushing 11.
But we're not seeing the same results we saw back in the 70s.
Why do you say that?
When you look at to the everyday person on the street, I don't think they see things like interest rates continuing to rise to 15, 16, 18% for prime rate or for loans. I don't think the immediate impact is there as it was in the 70s.
The immediate impact is not in terms of inflationary expectations, because they keep telling us there is none.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there is. That's therein lies the rub. They keep telling you the CPI numbers are way down, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's... For people that care about the truth a little bit, that's a problem.
Well, no, I understand that. But when you're talking about a guy who owns a house in Evergreen Park, if he's going for a mortgage, if he's going to try to buy a house and a mortgage, you're not seeing it creep up into 8, 9, 12% for his mortgage rate. That's what I mean, where it's kind of hidden right now. Whereas in the 70s when this happened, you saw everything ratcheting up to the point where we knew it was unsustainable and it was a heavy price to pay for everybody. The numbers that you're talking about right now are real, but I don't think they're seen by most people.
You will get at least 8 people a day that are supposedly smart people in financial radio and TV who will tell you there is no discernible inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, are they right?
I know I'm paying a lot more for different things.
Well, I mean, it's all a question of how you categorize stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there's something called a... Chat, what up? My machine is getting a little balky here, but matter of fact, I'm going to turn it off and turn it back on. But if you look at that, they've claimed we've had 10% and 11% inflation for the last decade per year. But look at some of the numbers you see. Maddie, what did the guy from the Bears just get paid as a safety? What do you think that was 10 years ago?
Talking about Eddie Jackson?
Yeah.
I don't know. What did he get paid?
It's like 55 mil or something.
Yeah, for 3 or 4 year extension.
Yeah, I mean, what the prices of major league teams? If you're anywhere where the 1% is, where the money is, and look at the inflation.
14.6 a year, 33 guaranteed. And 58.4 million.
What do you suppose that was in 2010 for a safety?
I would say probably slightly less than that.
Slightly,
or probably significantly less.
Significantly less, I would think.
I mean, it's
the baseball salaries have gone down.
Down.
Uh-huh. The average Major League Baseball salary is down from 3 years ago, which is the first time that's ever happened.
Which is odd when you take into the fact that the very large contracts like Mike Trout and Machado and Bryce Harper really skewed that in the opposite direction.
Are you talking about...
And they're getting accused by the Players Union of collusion, and they're, you know, guys like the pitchers last year that couldn't get a job until halfway through the season. There's a lot of instances like that now where guys are taking less money because everyone's colluding together and not bidding.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that...
Except for the top-tier guys.
Are you talking median or mean?
I can't remember the stat I saw. I don't know if it was median or mean. I'd have to look.
I'm going to say the mean has to be way up. It's because the minimum goes up every year. Right?
Yes.
You know, and the top guys keeps going up. You're saying the mid guys don't go up. You're right about that, probably. I mean, in other words, if the guys that didn't like the Bears, if the Cubs would have... and they signed him when? Halfway through the season, so he didn't count against...
So the headline is the average MLB salary dropped for only the fourth time in the last 50 years.
And how do they define
that? That's the average. What's the average?
So I'm going to have to read the article here. The union said Friday its final average was $4.095 million, down $1,500 from $4.097. It's only the fourth time that's happened since 1967.
Okay.
But think about what guys like Carl Yastrzemski were making back in the at the height of their career as the top guys in baseball compared to what the 25th, 26th guy on a team makes now.
Yeah, right. I mean, what I'm saying is you can't... You can, that would be somewhat of an anomaly, Matty, and it probably would be something to do with collusion. And it's some kind of an error. I bet the mean has to be up. But the big orangutans in the room for most people are healthcare, education, and taxes, mm-hmm. taxes and fees. And none of those really make their way into the CPI, which is the
and I agree with you that those numbers are up in a tremendous way.
Yeah.
When you look at it in healthcare, both with deductibles that people are paying, but the average cost for any kind of a procedure is just ridiculous.
And the, I mean, the, you, it is, I just don't understand why people feel, I'm just telling what I believe to be the truth. I mean, I was reading an article for some, lady on CNBC, and I don't know, I used to run all these stuff off, but I got such a, or I couldn't even come into my office, so I figured that was a bad idea. But there was, what was it, Maddie? It was, if you have a firm, say, for instance, you work at a place where they pay for your hospitalization, correct? And when she went back in the last 10 years, for the average person, the, if you're getting paid by them, because other companies have cut back, their deductible's a little higher, you probably got to pay a little bit. If maybe you got to pay for the dental you didn't have before. She calculated the increases that you had to pay in your share of what they're paying was higher than your average salary increase in the last 10 years.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that, and I think that's almost universal across the board.
But that's if they're paying. Imagine if they're not paying, and you're paying on your own.
Yeah.
I mean, the cutoff for, you know, I unfortunately am not involved in this, but I think the cutoff for, like, getting help on Obamacare is roughly $50,000, $55,000.
I'm not sure what it is, but...
But somewhere in there.
Somewhere about that, yeah.
And I would say that the... If you're making the normal family making $56,000, $60,000, which is the median, how the hell do you pay the hospitalization, which is the average corporate person now who pays for a hospitalization for somebody, say for the people we pay here at PTI, we're up to $20,000 a person. In 2010, it was $7,500. So, I mean, if you're a family that has no help from anybody and you're making $65,000 a year, how in God's name?
You better not get sick. You better not break a leg.
Yeah, because you can't be shelling out $20,000 after tax.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's where all that sort of is. But as to how you trade it, I think you do have to. Like yesterday morning, I think it was we couldn't wait, and we came in along a whole bunch of calls in gold, just luckily on Monday morning. First thing we did was sell them, right? We sold them at, actually it was Friday, we did something, and we sold them at 30 cents, and they closed the day at 6. And if you have a profit in the morning on some of the stuff that goes on overnight, then you have to get rid of it because it wanders back the other way against you.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no follow through at all.
But do you think this is going to continue to be cyclical, that any day there could be something White House that is going to skew the markets?
Well, look, what would happen, what really the market doesn't need, I mean, it probably doesn't want it all, but you need to somehow somebody from a higher spot to say, you guys are lying on all these numbers. And somebody, it's sort of like in August of 82 when somebody said, you know what, these interest rates could go the other way. And the market was like, you know, 800, and all of a sudden everybody goes, oops, if it goes the other way, you know, we got an issue. And I think that right now we're in Fed's pouring money, and at the end of the day, it's going to run into the market. It's not even. And we've got these issues overseas. And right now, how do you trade it? I mean, you can't assume Armageddon now and just go short everything. Why would you? Well, let's talk about it after a break. SP futures up 2, Dow futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 25. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Brendan Cronin with us. S&P futures up 175. NASDAQ futures up 27. Dow futures up 16. Right now, individual stocks in the Dow, Apple back over 300. Now, what happens? You got to buy Apple. I don't quite get that, but that's what we're doing. The stocks, like yesterday, in the midst of what you were talking about, Brendan, your Googles were up huge. Amazon is back, you know, pushing to go back to like 2,000, 2,100. These things were up like 30 and 40 bucks yesterday. So all of a sudden now, it's all is well because evidently the internet security, all those guys were up. Matty Weber's stock, FireEye, finally had an up day since he said it was a good stock, what, 6 years ago? It hasn't an up day until yesterday. Sorry, Matty.
Right. Never heard of it, so I don't know.
FireEye? That was your stock of the year 5 years ago. We got it
not
on
mine.
Tape. We got it on tape. We have you signing it, and it was time-stamped in the pit, just as they used to say on the floor.
Fake news.
Okay. Tech's up 120.9%. Aren't those guys are internet... What are they? Internet security guys, aren't they? FireEye?
Yep, but they're not in my business.
Well, no, but this is before you even get in that business. You liked them. See, dude, I remember this stuff. FTSE up 11.1%. Man, he's not digging through the
I think I would here. Remember what I said, and if I don't know the company, I know I didn't say it.
Kekaron up 22.4%. I think Dr. J might have said he liked it, and you went with him or something along those lines. Nikkei up 370. They're up the amount they were down yesterday. That's 1.6%. Shanghai up 21.7%. Hang Seng up 95.3%. Are they up because now we're taking our eye off the ball in China or what? Anyway, it's hard to keep track of this, Brendan, like you were saying. Bonds were bad. We were down to 1.78 yesterday. Let me see, it was a little blocky here today. Well, Matty, why don't you do Traffic Weather Sports? I'll wait for my Bond page to come up there.
I can do that. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have some issues on the inbound Kennedy just before Belmont. Some wood debris is in the left center lane. That's causing delays as folks have to navigate around that. O'Hara to downtown is up to 30 minutes and building. From Montrose, 18 minutes. Express lanes are 10 minutes. So not too bad yet, but crews are getting out there to get that wood cleared that must have fallen off a truck that's blocking the left center lane at Belmont. No issues on the Edens. Eisenhower looks good. Stevenson, light traffic as well. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. We do have a crash on LaGrange Road at the Des Plaines River Bridge, southwestern suburbs, and that's causing some delays. And then just west of there, Route 53 at Hobson Road, there is a crash. And then in the northwestern suburbs, Route 59 at Bartlett Road in Barrington, there is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, another mild day, and then we'll cool off significantly tonight and be cold tomorrow. But today, partly cloudy skies with a high of 40. We'll take that. Right now it's overcast and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 71. Right now it's clear and 40. In sports, the Bulls played Luka Doncic and the Mavericks down in Dallas last night. Played them tough for the most part, but fell 118 to 100, losing by 8 down in Dallas. Wendell Carter Jr. left that game in the first half with a pretty nasty ankle injury. He'll get that checked out later today. We'll learn more about that. Suns were off. They'll host the Kings tonight. Blackhawks were off. They'll welcome the Flames into town. That's a 7:30 p.m. puck drop at the United Center. Coyotes were off as well. They're at the Panthers tonight. Chief.
Now we've got oil down 43 cents. We got Brent down 55. So the whole number on oil, 62.84. Like I said earlier, Brent increased 70 bucks yesterday, 68.36 today. Natural gas, 2.11, down another 2 cents. Could Shanny be right for once, Manny? We're going to go under 2 bucks in natural gas. RBOB, 173. Give it to gold here, and then we'll talk to Joel. Gold is actually up 2.10, 15.70. Silver up 2 cents, 18.20. They came down during the day yesterday, especially silver, but we seem to have reached the floor here, at least for a little bit. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. Welcome to the new decade.
Yeah, hey, well, you're one of these guys that says it's a new decade, but that's okay. We won't go into that fight again.
Okay. What do you want to fight about?
I'm just saying it's some people think it's not the new decade, but, you know, whatever.
Oh, until 21?
Well, yeah. Just saying.
Okay. Well, it's 2020, so you know me. I'm a numbers guy.
Yes, it's so, at least the new year.
I'll stick with the numbers. What do you want to cover today?
Well, you're going to help me out because Brendan asked me, with all this stuff going on, and now we've got a potential war dropped on top, how do you trade this crap? And I said, well, wait till Joel gets here and we'll ask him.
What do you think I'm going to say?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking you.
What do I usually say in these kind of circumstances?
You say buy the dip.
Just buy the dip.
Yep.
I mean, sweet. What else do you say?
Yeah, what else?
I mean, that's... I practice that in my long-term portfolio and my shorter-term portfolio, but my intraday portfolio, no, I can't seem to have that same opinion. Aren't wars good for the economy? You know, wartime economy, you know, certainly good for the defense stocks, but I don't know, it takes a little attention away from the, trade war with China. It takes a little attention away from interest rates. So, little bugaboo. I imagine we'll keep flying on it. I don't know what Iran has in store for us, but, definitely gonna be reaction, if and when, they do a counteroffensive. But as of right now, it's hard to sell this market. It's hard to recommend sell, and it's hard to be a short seller, especially, if you're trying to short Tesla.
Well, I especially like the part, you learn some new stuff as you go. I especially like the part we hear this morning that if you invade somebody and occupy them and they ask you to leave, they got to pay you for the stuff you brought. I think that's so precious. That is so Trumpy. I can't believe it.
It's transactional.
Yeah, it's a transaction. I mean, we can't leave because we have too much stuff there.
Now, how much stuff was left throughout Europe after World War II?
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, or any other war.
Mm-hmm.
The Anyway, Joel, you know, it's interesting, was what Brennan was asking me earlier, and I didn't, couldn't put it into words, but the, even a modern, well, if there's such a thing as a modern war, even in a modern war, there's a lot of downtime, right? I mean, I was explaining to Brendan, when something happens at night, and you see the Spoo's down, you know, 45 points or something, unless something else happens at 9:30 or 10 the next morning, people will get immune or, quote, bored with that news. And
right.
And you'll have people, you know, testing bottoms and buying a little bit and buying a little bit. If it starts going back up, all of a sudden the mm-hmm. shorts get, I mean, it's even, can you imagine in like a World War II situation where you had to outfit some ships in San Francisco, get them to Hawaii, get them to the, even further than that, Guadalcanal or someplace. It was like a month between events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how did the market kind of hang in the middle during the month? And here, if nothing happens like every minute, the market's bored almost. Right? I mean, the last 2 days, there was no change in the news. Why all of a sudden we were down and came
not
back
at all.
Up?
I know. Well, I guess the, you know, the vow of, retaliation, I guess that was a little bit new, but you're right. And, we talked about it on the show yesterday, you know, was it just going to be deja vu all over again? You know, lower open, boom, they can't press it through the pre-market low, they bring it back, and boom, same thing happened yesterday, boom, lower open, couldn't take it through the pre-market low, and then they get it green. So, I don't know what's going to happen today. You got a little bit of opposite scenario. You did trade up near the all-time highs, but you backed off. When I look at, you know, I'm looking at some of the, past conflicts and stuff. I mean, I think, and you have no way of predicting this, but I think they're just going to be like quick strikes and quick counterattacks. I mean, the days of a ground, I mean, we're sending 2,000 troops over there. The day of a, drawn out, long, foot battle war. I don't know. I just think everyone's going to nuke everybody, and then, that's how it's going to come down.
What makes you think it's not going to be another Afghanistan? Where Iraq now becomes the battleground between us and, just like, what is it, Yemen, between Saudi and Iran. Yet another.
Hopefully, we've studied a little military history, and we can go back to Korea and Vietnam and the other circumstances and realize that it's a great waste of resources and we really don't accomplish anything, and we come back with our tails between our legs.
How many times has the invading force or the foreign force won on somebody else's territory?
I mean, the odds are stacked against you on something like that. And, we picked off the general. I mean, but, where's the concentration of, of the economy, the ports, the things that, really hurt them? That's just, boom, it's going to be quick airstrikes, and then I'm not sure what they're planning for retaliation, but, let's hope we have our guard up.
I'm very concerned that we're going this alone. The idea that we just could put more and more sanctions on it. The latest was the threat to put sanctions on Iraq if they kick us out.
Yeah.
And what is that all about? Does that give you confidence in your leadership? You invade a place. There's people. I don't even know what it's like to be. There's got to be areas in Iraq which are unoccupied and sort of normal. There have to be, because there has to be some kind of an economy there. Having never been there, I mean, I don't. There's got to be people farming and doing normal stuff, but it's hard to imagine. I mean, so what are we going to, for the next 10 years? We're going to be paying our guys to do bad stuff to the guys they're paying in Iraq, and it would be high season for military contractors and mercenaries again, like it has been in Afghanistan. Can we ever put a stop to this?
No.
Do we just not want to, or those people that cross their
path? I really, Chief, when it comes to this, I mean, I try and look at history and learn from the lessons of history. And, what it tells us is that, the more we get involved, the longer we stay there, the less we accomplish. So I'm hoping for, quick strikes, quick takeouts, retaliations. We do the same thing, because I think Trump's a little bit too worried about what's going on in November to start out, an all-out ground war in Iran.
Well, I don't think he's going to go for a ground war. I don't think there will be a ground war. I think it'll be much more on the guerrilla side. There'll be things like cyber attacks. There will not be a confrontation of the Iranian forces against the United States forces.
Let's hope not, for God's sake.
And the U.S. will not be going alone, Chief, because you know who will always be by their side and who's doing most of the monitoring and protection in the Middle East. You know who that is, right?
You think, well, the Israelis, yeah, but I'm saying I don't think you're going to get the Brits behind you. The Brits have a horrible taste on this Iraq invasion in the first place. They think that they followed us and they were idiots for doing it. And you know what? They probably were.
Anyway, Joel, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of EU support from the other countries.
Oh,
either.
God. You're not going to get German guys, I don't think. And that's a problem. Joel, thank you very much, buddy.
No sports today. Go Blue. I'll talk to you guys. We'll talk sports next week.
Yep. We have Kenny. All right. We're going to go to break. S&P futures up 250. NASDAQ futures up 29.25. Again, Apple threw 300. It was actually down a bunch yesterday. Came right back. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now. Can't buy me love.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. This is Mr. Brennan Carnan. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 2. NASDAQ futures up 27. We'll ask Kenny the same question. Election, gold running up, inflation so tame there isn't any of it, even though it's all over the place. We got Chinese tariff kind of situations. We've got other people that don't like us. Now we got maybe an Iranian war on top of it. How do you trade this, Kenny?
I think what you have to do
is eliminate the geopolitical noise, because like you and I have discussed a long time, the geopolitical noise does create kind of angst in the market, but in the long term, it doesn't really price stocks. Now, if you're a day trader, you love the noise because it creates the volatility. But if you're a long-term investor, then you should really stick to the plan, unless, of course, the noise has materially changed your outlook, your view, the picture, what you really think is going to happen. If it hasn't, then you stay the course. I think you remain cautious. When events like this happen, big events like this happen, I usually tend to sit back and wait 3 or 4 days to see how it kind of unfolds. And look, after three, we're now into the fourth day here, and it seems to be calming down versus what it was 1 and 2 days ago.
We were just talking before the break about how the difference in timing. I mean, the market gets bored with it and trades accordingly, yep. but should they be? I mean, that's...
No, the market, I don't necessarily think the market's bored of it. What I think the market, what we're seeing today and what we saw yesterday in the U.S. when we saw it test down to 32.14, and on Monday it tested 32.22, it found plenty of support. There are buyers. There are people that are looking for it to pull back. But look, we could throw what's happened. Why did it pull back more? The whole conversation was the market had every opportunity and reason to really kind of try to correct itself a little bit and take some of the fluff out. But that's where then the Fed plays in, as you and I have been discussing the last couple of weeks, right? They've just been increasing the balance sheet. And so therefore the market can't really, in my opinion, back off or adjust as much as maybe it should. But that's a whole other conversation. But one way or the other, I still feel good about where we are. I think that this crisis, this geopolitical crisis, is real. I think it is concerning. But from an investor point of view, I think it's less concerning. And as long as you've got the right portfolio, you've got the right names in it, you should take advantage of the mispricings that are created by the mindless algos that just, start selling everything. Look, tech led the way up and led the way down the last couple of days. Now again, it's leading the way up because the algos just go in and, they're sexy names, they're high growth names, blah, 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 all that stuff. And so you just have to stick to your plan as a long-term investor.
Well, we had a couple guys on CNBC Friday. One was the national security advisor for maybe Bush, and the other one was Clinton. I don't know. I forgot the two guys. They were a couple older dudes, but they were pretty bright guys. It's hard, yep, hard to remember all these guys. But the one guy was saying you have to look at it is something we did not need. I mean, it's not a question of whether, this guy was a bad guy, not a bad guy. Everybody knows he was a bad guy. Because it's a question we don't need. I mean, this administration is famous for taking their eye off the ball. He goes, no matter what, today is a great day for Putin. It's a great day for China. And I think it's a spectacular day for the FANG stocks, because any sort of antitrust or anything that might, any kind of regulations out of them is now off the table. And those stocks have been nothing but go straight up for the last 2 days, Kenny. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, no. If you look around, that's what's happening. I mean, those kinds of things. Your General Dynamics, they're going up with more money. I mean, you can sort of pick it, but you wonder this playbook. The only difference is, Kenny, is because we're lying on the inflation, and I'll say that flat out, because we have this massive amounts of debt, and because I think the average American, despite what the people say on TV, how great the consumer and the average guy is doing, I don't think that there's enough money for a $2 trillion deficit this year. I don't know where you're going to get that dough unless the Fed keeps pouring it out there. And one of these days, despite everybody's, concerted effort to tell people there's no inflation, somebody's going to say, hey, we got some. And all of a sudden, we got so many things going right now. Do we really need this, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. Here's the deal. Whether or not we needed the action we had, look, they attacked on January 1st, they attacked the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. And for those of us who remember, as you're watching TV, yeah, and we're watching them throw the flames and the attacking the Iraqi embassy, you and I both remember 1979 and what it felt like and looked like,
right,
when they stormed the U.S. embassy in Iran, and what happened then for a year and a half after that fact. And so, on the one hand, did we need this? No. But did they need to start with, They're the ones, and they continue to be the ones. Look, this guy's a bit of a bad guy. We all get it. Everybody has now admitted it. Yeah, he's a bad guy. He killed all the Syrians. He killed his own people. Okay, we get all that. But now he starts attacking the U.S. U.S. Embassy. At some point, you have to stand up and do something. And I think in the end, what will happen is that this will be seen as, you know, this guy was, as much as they were revering him across the Middle East, I think the rest of the world is on the side that, look, he was a bad guy. He needs to get taken out.
Well, but the idea that another country, even having said that, Kenny, the idea that another country can decide that a state official is a bad guy and just sort of take him out. I mean, what if somebody decides one of our guys? I mean, Rumsfeld, I thought, was a bad guy. But I don't think we would take very kindly to Rumsfeld wandering through Afghanistan and somebody taking him out. I mean,
I would agree with you, but Rumsfeld doesn't have the reputation. Rumsfeld's not going around helping the Syrian leader there kill half the people that live in Syria. He's not killing his own people.
Right.
Rumsfeld's not doing that.
What I'm saying is, in our mind, I'm not comparing one to the other. What I'm saying, right, when you start talking about other countries getting to figure out which one of your guys or their guys is bad guys and knocking off state officials, that's a new world, Kenny.
That is a new world, but the truth is, I guess that's always a risk, right? I mean, at any point, someone can attempt to kill any U.S. elected official or any elected official around the world. That kind of goes with that territory. I'm not saying it's something that happens all the time, but I think that's always a risk, no matter who you are, right? There's always a risk that somebody's going to try to blow you up.
Well, the last guy we took out in a similar manner was Yamamoto in a declared war.
Yeah.
This is a little different than that. I'm trying to find what I'm trying to do for the last, actually 3 days, Kenny, I'm trying to find out what the current rules are. And as you can imagine,
right,
I'm getting people all over the place.
Yeah, I think the rules are fluid, right? I don't think there's a hard line. I think that's the problem, right? I think that for everyone, the line's a little bit different, and I don't think there's one straight line that can define that.
And
maybe there should be, but this guy wasn't so much an elected leader. He wasn't the leader, the prime minister, the president,
right,
the chancellor of the country. He was leader.
He'd be similar to
our
chief of staff, our joint chiefs of staff, or somebody in the military.
Well, I guess I'm trying to start from, as hard as it is, Kenny, I'm trying to start from ground zero, and that's a bad term, but we've got a contractor over there. Nobody here knows what the bleep these people are doing. Who are these guys? Where are we spending? What are we even doing in Iraq? How many spots do we have? How many people? How many people are we hiring? How many people in Iraq are we paying to do stuff? I don't know. The answer could be we're perfect angels, but I would doubt that. I mean, now what is, so they, a rocket hits one of these contractors. Now, do we have any obligation whatsoever to protect a contractor in a place where nobody should be? I mean, we launch an attack and we kill 25 people. Okay, we're 25-1. All right, which is a little harsh. One would think if you're somebody living in Finland, you'd say, well, that was kind of an interesting response. Now all of a sudden, these guys come to the embassy, and yeah, they look like a bunch of idiots, but nobody gets killed. Now all of a sudden, we take out this guy. I mean, you're right. The last thing Trump wanted on his plate was another Benghazi, because that's what killed
or another Iranian hostage crisis.
Why don't we start by telling people what exactly it is we're doing over there? And do we feel an obligation to
No, but do you tell them before you do it, or do you tell them after you do it? I mean, that's the whole argument, right? If you announce that you're going to do it, how are you going to do it? There's got to be some level of secrecy.
I'm not on that level. I'm talking about, I've had three people tell me this weekend, absolutely emphatically, that if you're an American contractor working in Libya, making $1,000 an hour in an oil rig, and somebody bumps you off, even though we tell people don't be in Libya, it's our obligation to protect you and go in there and kick ass. I'll tell you what, I don't believe that at all.
Well, but listen, a lot of those contractors are in those countries at really the request, right? The U.S. government wants them in those countries.
Right.
So I think there is an unwritten obligation. I'm not saying you're going to go in there and start blowing the country up if they kill one of the workers, because there is some inherent risk in it. But I also think that we have those American contractors in those countries, and so there's this understanding that the government is going to somehow offer some level of protection.
Don't disagree. But I'm saying at some point, do the people in Congress even know what exactly is our mission, our engagement, our budget in Iraq? And I'm going to say the answer is no.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think they do. I don't think there's, I think there's and then, not a large percentage that do.
And I personally have a problem with that because I don't know what all these guys are doing. Are they CIA? Right. Are they something? I mean, I'm just saying, Kenny, just saying, you know. So it's hard for me to.
Listen, it's a great conversation. It could go on. We could talk about this for hours.
Because when you don't know where you're doing it, whether you're on foot or horseback to start with, how do you judge a rocket landing on a camp when a guy gets killed? I mean, I don't even know what to make of that. Do you?
Right. No, you don't. But if you put it in the context of what had just happened over the last couple of days, I don't really care about the broader picture. I just care about that they attacked the U.S. embassy. It was very reminiscent of what happened in 1979. It's nervous. It's scary. Because of who they are and what we saw and how we see them treat their own people. So I think someone has to stand up. And on the one hand, I think that's where Trump, he stands up. Now, what happens from here on out, I guess that's going to be the next step. But he doesn't back down.
But if we had 15 other countries with us in the United Nations and said, we got to deal with these guys, I'd feel a lot more comfortable. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I understand that. And I also understand that, you know, I don't know why there was no conversation between the U.S. and the Iraqi government, because they're right when they say, you guys were a sovereign nation, you did this, you didn't even tell us you were doing it. That I'm not really sure why I understand happened.
I think we have two sets of rules, Kenny, and I'm not so sure that... Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you next week. SP Futures up 250. Be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening
here. Well, I don't think Stacks and Jacks. Tom Harley, Mr. Brendan Kerman, Mr. Jeff Joseph, he's trying to get you're good to go?
Good to go.
Well, that's because Brendan just unplugged you. Uh-oh, we got people trying to do the wiring in here, Manny.
I'll come in.
I'm all good.
He's good now. We got it. Brendan found the spot. He pulled it out and pushed it back in again. It always works, right, Manny?
Sometimes.
What are we talking about?
God, we were
in an out burger.
Yeah, with the in and out burger. S&P futures up 1.25, Nasdaq futures up 26. You know, we had a little get together last night, and I don't know, was that all politically correct, Manny?
Last night,
yeah,
I would say probably not.
No,
but funny and a good time.
Yeah, and talk about encroachment.
As long as you don't have tapes of it.
Well,
exactly. This day and age, you just don't get recorded. You'll be okay.
See, now, when you never get the whole part of the story, now, I'm going to try and be politically correct here, but let's just say we've had some encroachment by the females into the sports bar. Just saying.
You mean up at the Tripoli when you're watching on Monday night? Or
The girls have taken over the place for The Bachelor, which is fine. But
it's actually quite refreshing,
yes,
in a bar that usually is like 99% guys to actually have a table full of ladies in there. However, when the show starts at 7 p.m. or whatever on Mondays, they turn the volume on and they turn it on super loud. And so it's like including the commercials and everything. So you're talking over a show that's already very annoying at a super loud volume, which is interesting.
Now, the males might say, just say, that when you say you have the volume on for, say, the Bruin game, that the volume is on in such a way where you can hear it, correct? Well, now what the ladies mean is that with all 10 of them talking, it has to be louder than they can hear it above their own conversation, which is totally different volume levels, shall we say.
But that's the difference between watching a show like The Bachelor and watching a football game or a hockey game. You can watch a football game and know what's going on just without sound. I mean, you can watch the play and you pretty much know what's going on. You can't do that with a show like The Bachelor, which is serious stuff about the questions that they're asking.
Well, let's just say that if you're sitting at the bar stool between the ladies and the blaring TV, there's sound coming from both sides. Is that a fair statement, Manny?
I would say so.
It's not like the 10 ladies are sitting there quietly watching. They're commenting on every outfit, every girl, every guy. So, why does this guy look to me like the same as the last guy last year? Is that the look they want, the crew cut kind of thing?
I couldn't tell you, Chief. You've probably watched more Bachelor than I have.
I've watched 3 of them last year. Every time I forgot when I went to the bar.
It's 3 more than I've ever watched.
Well, I'll tell you what. To be caught between the two of them is hilarious.
All right. Wait a second. I've been gone for 2 weeks, and it's not like nothing geopolitically is going on. And we're talking about The Bachelor?
Well, this is serious stuff.
We took a 5-minute break from talking about the geopolitical stuff, which we've been talking about for 3 days.
I see.
So, Jeff, give us because Brendan asked me, now that you have the answer to this, Brendan said, in all this mess, how do you trade it? Go ahead, tell us.
Don't you want to ask The Bachelor?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I was extremely jealous on that show of last year, without a doubt. The guy was driving around in a totally refurbished, like, 68 original Ford Bronco. I would have died for that truck. I love those things. Now, he could have all the women. I just want the truck.
You wanted the truck, and you wouldn't even go for something like a refurbished 65, 68 Mustang?
I'd much rather the Bronco Billy than the... the bullet car, yeah, but that's a particular one. But no, I'd much rather the Bronco than a Mustang. Those things are cool.
Who else made a Bronco famous?
Well, you got to get a white one, right?
A white Bronco, right?
Exactly. The O.J. Simpson. You know what? That'll have to go up on auction someday if it hasn't already.
How about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, if it hasn't already.
You know, hey, speaking of which, evidently O.J. did not make the top five in the top running backs of all time. There's a...
Who did? What was the
list? Boy, Matty. Look, I'm going to say...
Emmitt Smith.
Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton.
Jim Brown.
Jim Brown.
I think Jim Brown and Barry Sanders.
Barry Sanders. And who's the fifth?
I think you said five.
No.
Was it Thurman? Thurman Munson was the other one?
Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, and... let me find it.
Yes, I think O.J. was six. But there were a lot of good players, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The top 10 quarterbacks was interesting. A couple guys were left out of there. But
hey, have you seen the commercial with Brian Urlacher lately where he said that he didn't like being bald because people made fun of him in the locker room when he was in college? Can you imagine? I mean, how?
He wasn't bald in college. Was he?
Well, he said that...
I think
that
he was bald in college.
Okay.
He said in his commercial that he's glad he now has his hair regeneration so that people wouldn't make fun of him in the locker room. And I think, who in the hell would ever believe that anybody in a locker room would make fun of you?
Yeah. Bullying, suspension of disbelief.
Well, I mean, I would give Dr. J grief if I never made fun of him.
Yeah, well, his comment was that people made fun of him in the locker room because he was bald. And I can just imagine anybody, even a defensive lineman, making fun of Brian Urlacher and him just putting the guy through a locker.
Yeah, I mean, you can kid somebody. It's different than making fun of them.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, even my niece's boyfriend forever, he's on her softball team, Big Danny, was there last night. And he's got not much hair. I said, look at the bright side, Dan. You don't have to worry about hat hair, you know. But you know what gets me about those guys, those poor guys? How come they pay the same price for a haircut?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Yeah.
Anyway, Jeff, we were talking earlier, and I'd love to have you opine
speaking
on this.
Speaking about geopolitical events.
Yeah, speaking about geopolitical we were talking earlier about the difference in time frame, where something happens overnight, market gets the crap beat out of it. And in the morning, it's like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, nothing else happens, and people kind of inch in a little bit. We start creeping back up a little bit, and all of a sudden we get a rally into the close, then something else happens the next night. It's kind of an odd, some of it almost seems like it's boredom, or the shorts can't hang in there, or the Fed's putting money in, but it seems like right now you want to wait a couple hours and kind of fade any bad news. I mean, it's worked so far. I mean,
it's interesting that you mentioned that at Luckbox lately. We've been trying to vet out the extent to which Chinese day traders are having influence and opportunities in the market. It's been a growing thing over the last 10 years. The amount of day traders in China have grown significantly. They began investing. You know, you don't go far on Chinese wages for the most part. And they began investing in peer-to-peer lending about 7 or 8 years ago, and it became a really large market for the retail investor in China. And just recently, there's been moves by the CCP, the Communist Party, to make a government restriction on the amount of investment or speculation that people can do in peer-to-peer lending. And this, again, is the Chinese retail investor. And the beneficiary of that has been day trading, and apparently there's a large cult of Chinese day traders, a really material, significant one, and they're trading. They're trading at hours, obviously, that we're not trading, and of course they can't trade in U.S. stocks directly. But I'm curious. I'll take this opportunity to ask you.
You sort of can.
How much do you know about this? The Chinese day trading market. It's something that we've been trying to get out.
I know somewhat about it because I get one of his attorneys I did business with a few years ago calls me and says these guys are from China and they want to get a U.S. Port, brokerage firm, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. So I went over. He was still alive at the time. One of my buddy at IB, Billy McGowan, who was the, I don't know if you remember that name, but yeah. Billy was he was a trader. He was a broker on the floor when I first started. So Billy and I go back forever. So I talked to him for like 4 hours one day, and he goes, if you guys want to get set up over in Hong Kong, just let us know. I mean, we'll set you up. It won't cost you anything. It'll be, you have to fill out the stuff in person over there. We'll do that all for you. We have an office. It'll be PTI Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And everybody's in the same office. And if these guys want to electronically go through, they'll be on our platform. And whatever. The trades will be for you, but we'll do all the risk for you and everything, and you'll never even meet these people. Well, turns out the guys, you know, they want everything for nothing, which is normal, but they constantly, you know, throw fish in the water and never do anything about it. That's kind of the mantra of that group. Right. But no, you can easily get a spot in Hong Kong which can trade here.
Right.
So it's not like it's hard to do. And, so we ended up, you know, not doing it because I could never pin these guys down basically. But no, it is not hard at all. You know, I think that, I mean, I honestly believe from what I learned from there that a lot of this stuff, especially with the crap going on with the tariffs and so forth, every one of those things was front run out of China. And some maybe were front run out of here, but I'll sort of accuse the guys here. I'll really accuse the guys there. I don't think they have any morals at all about it. I mean, and you know, so I think there's a lot of that going on. And they can day trade through that thing. Matter of fact, it was all going to be day trade.
We're picking up early indications of that as well. That there's a lot of front running going on in China.
But I mean, IB is got, they've had a place over there for, I'm going to say, damn near a decade. And I mean, PTI is not that big, but they're willing to set us up. We'd have been PTI China in like a week.
Sure.
It's been, or Hong Kong, not China.
Right.
And so then there's somehow the people in China, you know, everybody has an app, right? And everybody wants on their app. Everybody's got the cell phone thing is way more competitive in terms of the apps over there, I guess, than there are here. So they want the app from, this guy had kind of a mini Baidu type of thing, and he wanted to add brokerage services to the app, to like the mini Baidu. So we wouldn't have any part of that, but just he would have to come through an American company out of Hong Kong. But there's no way we could be registered in China. Right? But it's weird. You have to fill out the forms everything is electronic over there, but you gotta actually bring the forms into the brokerage firm. Which is so odd when you think you don't even have to do that here anymore.
Right. Exactly.
Now, I prefer that. And you're supposed to know your customer, right? So you might want to meet him once, you would think. But over there, they still require that, which I never would have guessed.
Well, so, we've been spending a lot of time looking at China. It's going to be a focus of an upcoming issue.
Well, that'll be interesting to read.
I can go on and on about the different perspectives and different angles that we're looking at. But one of the things that was interesting was yesterday I was speaking with a retired Brigadier General Robert Spalding. He has a new book out called Stealth Warfare. And the premise of the book is really compelling. It basically speaks to the extent that China is assaulting the U.S. on a multi-frontal basis. Everything from IP infringement to human rights to surveillance to censorship to trade restrictions. And that the whole underpinning of this is that in China, looking back at what they call the century of humiliation, which was last year, millennial, that this time they consider this new 100-year period to be the century of retribution and revenge. And
against who? Just anybody?
Against the U.S.
Okay.
Very explicitly. And that using the basis of the Art of War, the well-known ancient
Chinese book?
The Art of War. I think it's
Know Your Enemy.
Yes, Know Your Enemy, and more importantly, that the art of successful conflict is not to actually engage in conflict.
Not directly.
Mm-hmm. And that's been the approach they're taking on all these different levels. So while they're paying lip service to more Western advances with respect to markets, that nothing that they're doing under the radar really shows that.
What am I missing here? Out of all the people in the world, who's been nicer to the Chinese than us?
Well, it's not being reciprocated. You know, the book does an excellent job. It's called Stealth Warfare. It's an excellent book because it touches on all these points, and it looks at everything from, you know, it looks at all these different perspectives. And it's part of their plan, the Belt and Road Initiative, which is basically a redo of what the Silk Road was years ago when all paths led to China for trade. The Belt Road Initiative is basically part of a plan where China's investing billions, well over 150 to 200 billion committed just over the next couple of years in investing in the infrastructure of neighboring countries, as many as 60 countries.
Wow.
And the quid pro quo is that we'll give you all this money and we'll build out your infrastructure, but you know, the trade, your trade is going to be directed towards us. And
sounds like the EU.
Part of the EU, yeah. it does.
It's like Germany. Right. This is a cool deal. Just make sure you buy your butter and eggs from us.
Right. So it's been interesting just looking at all the different manners in which they're waging this war.
Didn't we send guys over there, the Flying Leathernecks, I remember the movie, to help them fight Japan? And didn't we kick Japan's ass so Japan could stop raping and pillaging their country? And didn't we send George Marshall there for like 2 years to try and negotiate a peace between Chiang Kai-shek and Mao Zedong, and they decided to go off their own way? Where exactly did we fault here? In their eyes.
According to Brigadier General Robert Spalding, we faltered in being complicit with accepting the notion that they truly want to westernize and liberalize their markets, and that there's been no real indication of that. Moreover, in his very first chapter of his book, and we spoke about this last night on the phone, he indicts our lawmakers as being complicit in the opening chapter. He cites how
we'd probably agree with that, no matter what the subject.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell is married to Elaine Chao, who is
transportation secretary.
Yes, whose family owns one of the largest conglomerates in China.
Yep.
They received $5 to $25 million as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he said he's not going to point to a quid pro quo, but
however,
just to show that, you know, there is this manner in which China, you know, infiltrates. And he spoke extensively about the lobbies and how much money they spend. And you know, the opening story is a guy working at the Marriott corporate office somewhere in Oklahoma, I believe. He's been there 25 years. He runs a social media account for Marriott, makes a mistake of retweeting something that was sympathetic to Hong Kong protesters, and he ends up being fired. After 20, and it's all because of the influence of China.
Isn't it stunning that...
Well, look at what happened with the NBA.
With the NBA.
We have First Amendment rights here,
yes,
but we don't have there.
That's right.
That is so spectacular, I can't even begin to... You begin to even understand it, much less talk about it.
And then he speaks again in the same manner to the manner in which Joe Biden is compromised as well by China and you know, as evident, citing some of his very kind of laissez-faire public utterances about Chinese policy and not recognizing them as a threat. So the author takes a very bipartisan view of indicting, you know, our lawmakers is not being up to the task. And then he goes on to say that, you know, and cites all these other instances of human rights abuse and us saying nothing. So we also spoke to Rashan Abbas, who is an activist who has been outspoken about the Uyghurs, which is a Muslim minority in China, of which now there are between 1 million and 2 million Uyghur men that are interned in Chinese, what they're referring to as re-education camps.
Right.
And while they're being interned in these camps, that the Han, which is a regional description, the Han Chinese men have been empowered by the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, to go into the homes of the women of the Uyghurs who are living alone now because the men have been interned, basically imprisoned, and that there's been a mass systematic rape of these women occurring in China and as a part of trying to dilute their genetic influence in the country. and that this woman has been Rashaan Abbas.
Says one is being Muslim, being a genetic thing.
Yeah, well, she has been so outspoken about this that 18 months ago, her sister, who lives in China, was kidnapped by the Chinese government. There's been no word of her whereabouts. So we spoke to her yesterday as well. And as, even though she hasn't heard anything about whether her sister is alive or dead for the last 18 months, she is committed to go on being outspoken about this. And so, so you know, and we've been trying to balance this all, and I'm sorry to get on into this China discussion, but we've interviewed and polled and surveyed our own audience of Luckbox magazine subscribers and asking them who they think the primary threat is, and listed Russia, Iran, China, Saudi Arabia, and, you know, North Korea, those five countries. And interestingly enough, invariably, and this is without paying any tipping our hat as to where we're going with this kind of extensive China-focused issue, our audience is recognizing China as being the primary threat confronting America's security interests and economic interests over the next 10 years going forward. And Russia ranked really low. So either the media pounding the Russia threat to American interests is not resonating among our audience, or we have an audience that's highly aware of some of the economic threats that China poses to American interests going forward. So we've been we found this all really interesting. The TikTok, I think, has been the most most interesting thing. So the Pentagon, as you know, has told the U.S. military all
stop using TikTok.
Stop using within the next 90 days, and most recently within the last 3 days, there's been an indication that TikTok users, of which there's 24 million American downloads of TikTok right now, which is an app that used to be called Musical.ly, which is basically like Hive. It's short videos that are nonsensical thing that our teenagers are looking at, although many celebrities have taken to TikTok. But the concern is that deepfake, if you're familiar with what deepfake is, which is a way to digitally doctor videos and
images.
So you can't tell. That deepfake has been integrated into TikTok, and every user of TikTok doesn't know, but inadvertently a photograph is being taken of him while he's looking at his mobile phone, and that down the road there will be the opportunity to deepfake any user of TikTok. It's just part of this overall data-driven surveillance economy that China is engaging in. So it's just been a fascinating thing. I'll end with one last thing. As you know, they've implemented social
scoring. You can't end. We got questions for you.
Yeah, well, they've implemented social scoring in China. And the social scoring is such that everybody has a number on their head. It's like a Black Mirror episode. And that this shows their more or less value. China knows everything about all of its residents, including whether or not they own animals or not. If they are dissidents, their dogs are taken away. And that the way social scoring is being used to exert pressure on Chinese residents. So let's say you're a Chinese student studying abroad in the U.S. and then you get a job over at Google. Is that the Chinese government can pressure you to bring back secrets from your employer at the risk of lowering the social score of your family back home if you don't comply. So all these things, this is not anecdotal. There's evidence that shows that all of this is in play, and that I asked the Brigadier General yesterday to grade our current administration in terms of their response to China. He gave them a C+. It was very negative on all the different fronts that we're not stepping up, but and the only relative context was that he gave all the prior administrations D's and F's. So the China threat, you know, right now seems to be a really interesting area that's not getting perhaps the attention that it should be getting.
Jeff, I'm going to say that we only have 30 seconds, but then we have more time after break to talk about this. I'm going to say that our biggest threat to the U.S. is ourselves.
Pogo. We've seen the enemy, and he is us.
Look in the mirror. I mean, if you walk into one of the next board meetings of the University of Illinois, you're going to find the people in there saying we get more money from the people from China, put them in our best courses and not our own people. But anytime you do something like that, we're walking walking right down the road. Why can't we just have a situation where you can't buy a company here? Because the losers here, I'm going to say in the Trump administration, but before that there was other people, the thought that they can't sell their company to a China guy for more than a guy here, what do you mean? It's my right to do that. But then, by the way, he can't open the hood of the Mack truck and see what's in there. We just bought the place.
Well, the other part of that is that if you have Chinese students or foreign students, but you won't let them stay in the country to get a job here, sending them back.
But we let them stay at less price than our own people will be making.
Exactly right.
SP Futures up 50 cents now, NASDAQ Futures up 21. Good discussion. We'll talk about it when we come back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
So, Maddie, you're missing all this conversation here. Is your Does your body heat run a little hotter than normal or not?
Does my body heat run hot?
Some people
no
are a little, some people are a little hotter, some not.
Really?
Brennan says they check your temperature on the plane, and if it, you go through the airport, and if
no,
you're
it's through
hot,
the airport, not through the plane.
They think you got the flu, and they come quarantine you in your hotel.
Really? Who's
yep.
doing that?
China.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
It's that's interesting. And S&P futures, you know, the more you learn, we just learned a lot of stuff on this show. I wasn't going to China before. No, I'm definitely not going to China. S&P futures down a buck, quarantined in my own hotel. If it was a nice place, I guess it wouldn't be so bad.
Well, they've got a great wall over there.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. They do, yes. S&P futures up 15, Dow futures up 20, so we're back like to sort of the flat line here. Europe making a bounce back from yesterday down, although not as much as earlier. DAX only up 101, that's 0.8%, was up more than that earlier. FTSE only up 13.2%, CAC around up 20.3%. It's like we're dropping into somewhat of a, wait and see mode here, it appears. Nikkei up 371.6, those guys were down like 4 something yesterday. Shanghai up 21.7, Hang Seng up 95.3. We've got the, bonds. 1.81 on the 10-year was, you got up to 1.9, so we're backed off of that. A Bund minus 0.28. Japan minus 0.02. Again, can't quite crack the plus number, but they're very, very close. Oil, which the Brent hit $70 yesterday, 68.36, so it's backed off of that, reasonable amount. Oil, our oil, West Texas Intermediate, down 48 cents, 62.79. Natural gas, 2.11. Jeff, we've got contributors to the show claiming under $2 by July. What do you think of that? RBOB, 173. Gold, and now it's down $1.60. It was up $2 earlier, 15.67. Silver down 4 cents, 18.13. It was under 16 about 5 weeks ago, so that's a big move in silver. Maybe what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're actually looking pretty decent, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways as it's been the last couple of weeks. You would think everyone would be heading back to work and school this week, but traffic's still relatively light. We do have a crash on the Tri-State Tollway, I-94 southbound up on the North Shore just before Washington Street, and that's causing some delays. But normal traffic volumes on the Edens and Kennedy, no issues on the Eisenhower. Traffic building on the Stevenson, but nothing of note. Southside expressways have looked good all morning. Only other issue in the area is in the western suburbs out in Wheaton, Route 59 at Washington Street. There is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, another pleasant winter day today weather-wise. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 40. Right now it's overcast and 33 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 41. In sports, the Bulls lost down in Dallas to the Mavericks, 118-110. Wendell Carter Jr. left the game with an ankle injury. We'll learn more about that later on today. Suns were off. They'll host the Kings later on tonight. Blackhawks were off last night. They welcome the Calgary Flames into town tonight. That's a 7:30 p.m. puck drop at the United Center. Coyotes were off last night as well. They're at the Panthers tonight. Chief.
Hey, the guy you were telling me on the way in that's so good on Dallas. Now, did he have to go through the regular draft process here?
He did. He was drafted. I don't know if it was one of those things where he was drafted and then stayed. He came right away. So he played professionally, I think, from the age of like 15, as they often do in Europe. And then at 19, he won MVP of the Euro League, which is the second best league in the world behind the NBA. And, for a 19-year-old to win MVP is just unheard of. And, so he was drafted, I think, number 2 or 3 overall, something like that. Certainly top 5 by Dallas. And people.
Was Dallas that crummy one year to get a number 1 or 2
yeah,
pick?
Yeah, they were. And, it was kind of, as Dirk was retiring and they were transitioning, basically. And, people knew he had the skills, but everyone wondered, how is this going to translate to the NBA playing against much better competition? And, it's translated. He's in the MVP conversation in his second season, and he's unbelievable.
He's only 21?
And he's 21.
Wow.
Guy's phenomenal.
Wow.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Let's hope he stays healthy.
I mean, I need to pull up his numbers here, but off the top of my head, I think he's averaging something like 28 points and like 11 assists and 8 rebounds. I mean, the guy is just incredible. He can shoot from anywhere. He's strong. He gets to the basket. He's 6'6", plays the point guard, two guard, whatever you want.
He's like Magic Johnson was bigger, but he's like a Magic that can shoot.
Exactly, yes. Very similar. People are saying he's a combo of Bird and Magic, where he's got the outside shot, but then the passing and driving ability of Magic.
With those numbers, he's almost averaging a triple-double like Oscar Robertson.
Right. His numbers are comparable to like LeBron James and Oscar Robertson and Jordan in his early years when he would pile up a bunch of assists with his points.
Yeah, it was. Boy, it's really summer. It's nice to see, actually.
Yeah.
I got a quick question for you.
Too bad he's not on the balls.
For all you dudes, how do you, when you, your parents, your, I don't know what the rules are in Europe, but here a 15-year-old can't sign a contract. Your parents have to sign it, wouldn't they?
Here, yes. They'd have to sign until he's 18.
And that might be the case there, too.
Yeah, what's
up? I assume in Spain or wherever he was playing, that professional team that he was on, I assume his parents had to sign it when he's 15, 16.
So if he goes to college, he's going at night or a semester here and there and tag teaming it, right? He's a professional ball player with school being, well, I guess.
Well, I don't know if they have the same restrictions in Europe as far as what they have here for collegiate athletes.
I think he's probably on a tutor program or something like that, which all those big-time athletes in soccer and basketball are
over Olympic there. Athletes.
Or right. Olympic athletes, exactly. And so I assume he has some sort of high school equivalent education. I don't know if he ever did any sort of college or not.
Well, good for him. I wish him all the luck. And like I say, I hope he doesn't get hurt. So back to what we were talking about, guys. I mean, you get the feeling, when Jeff, you come in and you always pick a topic, or the magazine has, and it is stunning how once you dig into the depth, your whole view of the subject kind of changes. And yet, on the other hand, when you're writing the magazine stuff, and I, with your guys' help, is trying to do the same thing through the show, trying to get people to think a little different, a little deeper, and actually get a few facts behind yourself before you tweet. Yet the world kind of is going another direction. They want everything, 20 words or less. And I don't know it seems like the stuff with China is so complicated that, even the idea of people hacking back and forth. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It didn't seem like it to me. My last year on the board of the SIBO was like 98. Believe it or not, I was on the double secret internet security committee, only because everybody else on the board, when they said volunteered, they all stepped back and I didn't, kind of a thing. So there I was without knowing anything. We're like five people who were geniuses on this stuff. And the meetings were every couple of weeks. God bless. They said we'd have a hack, somebody showed up to try and hack the place virtually twice a day. And this is back in 98. But at that time, it was mostly people, a lot of them from Finland, a lot of them from Sweden, people just nothing else to do. That was their shtick. And they would just, they'd go to a place, and they'd hack around for a while trying to see if they could walk up the chain, and if they didn't, they'd go to the next place. You know, sort of like your car. If it looks like it's locked, rather than break the window if the next guy is unlocked. Doesn't mean like a burglar alarm in your house stops the burglar, it just makes him go next door, right? Basically. Yeah. When did it become, maybe it was, for more selective places, when did it become this massive state-sponsored, where if you got into the SIBO, you could, into the mainframe? We did stuff like, when the SIBO started offering quotes on their own website, we didn't take the quotes right from our mainframe because we were afraid people could walk up. We went and bought them from somebody else and did it from an outside party. Because we want to know, it was an older system, and we figured somebody good enough could probably walk their way up and screw the thing up. So this isn't new, but it seems like the people doing it and the purpose of it is way different than it was back then, or at least what I saw. I mean, we're actually talking about countries hacking other countries to bleep them up, which I don't think maybe was happening in 98, but at least the SIBO, we never looked at it as, If you could take down the SIBO, it was a terrorist event. We just said some idiot's going to get in there and try and do his damnedest. But I'm saying our motivation in looking at it, we didn't have those kinds of suspicions. But now, obviously, people do for reason. When did this all change?
Well, that's a good question. Probably as soon as there was opportunity to arbitrage and economic advantage. Look at the latency issues on the exchanges that have been co-opted by high frequency traders, just to grab that nanosecond for information advantage. So I think it's front running has been around forever. I think to answer your question, we just were running at a much slower speed. I think there's always been opportunities to try to front run any information for economic gain.
Why do you think the regulators, and I'll be blunt with this, are so friggin' inept? I mean, Milton Friedman, I heard him say in class, he said, we shouldn't worry about insider trading. because the system will police itself. But now, in his time, the system was open outcry. So mm-hmm. if you and I are trading the IBM pit, and three earnings in a row, Brennan walks in and buys something a second before the earnings come out, and he's always right. You and I, after two or three of these times, are going to say, well, we're not trading with Brendan anymore. And, oh, by the way, Brendan may walk out with a black eye one of these days. Not that I was advocating violence, but, at least, but I mean, you could see who you were trading with, so you could police yourself. Now I don't see how the hell you're dependent on the SEC and FINRA to police for you, and I don't trust those people to do a good job, because the good guys are going to let through, and the bad guys they aren't. You know, in my opinion, I mean, that's probably a little too harsh, but what I'm saying is, when you move from an open outcry situation where you can see who you're trading with to something electronic, I mean, you may think you're policing it, but it's nowhere near the same as it was. I'm not saying that we should be open outcry anymore. I mean, that's not my point. But when you make these moves, you have one exchange. IBM trades in one spot, okay? All of a sudden, it's in 17 different places. Well, how the hell do you even maintain any sort of discipline over 17 places? Where it was in one spot, the people could police it themselves. So you make these changes, and you're changing stuff, you don't understand you're changing, and all of a sudden you go, how do we get there from here? I mean, how all of a sudden is there payment for order flow, and people are doing this and that and the other thing? How'd that all happen? Well, because now it's at 17 different places instead of one. I mean, we do these things, and sometimes we make it hard for ourselves, I think.
Well,
I said a lot there, so it's hard to answer.
But going back to the core question there is that what speaks to the ineptitude of regulators. And I'll give you a parallel to go back to the conversation I had with that Brigadier General yesterday. When I asked him why the government, the lawmakers, the military seem to be so tone deaf as to the threat that China poses, and why there wasn't more of a comprehensive a stature against China, not just in specific verticals like trade or et cetera, but on a broader basis. And he said that's just not how bureaucracies work and how they think. There's no generalists. Everyone has their narrow little vertical that they're working on. They might be incensed about it. It might be, but it's the only thing they care about. So he spoke to how all the container loads that come into the ports from China, that there's not remotely enough inspectors to inspect all those. Maybe 1.5% of these containers are actually inspected. If they were all inspected as they were supposed to be, then we'd recognize all the fakes and the fraudulent products that are coming in to rip off American-made products. But that's not done because there just isn't the capacity. And he spoke to all these different examples how if that's what you're looking at, that's the only thing you're looking at, and you might be, you know, try to solve that problem, but that nobody in bureaucracies are empowered to look at a problem as a whole, only their specific vertical. And that's why our policies fall short on a macro basis. It was an interesting observation, and it's probably, you could probably make that same statement with respect to regulators. They might be looking at technology or infrastructure or latency or front running or insider trading, but nobody looks at, you know, the entire picture and develops a policy about that.
I would say that if you and I, and we'll even bring Brendan and Maddie with us, if we were going to talk about inspection at the port of L.A., stuff coming in from China, I would say that there's 1,000 containers showing up today, or 2,000. I have no idea what the number is. You guys probably know better than me. Say it's 2,000. Guess what? I got a random number table here, and we're going to take 50 of them, and we're going to give them a Class 1 inspection, and we're going to take 5 of them, and we're going to open up every box. I think over a period of 6 months, we would do an outstanding job, knowing full well we're missing some, mm-hmm. but we're going to get our hands around the magnitude of the problem very, very rapidly. If we actually make it random and don't say, well, Matty Weber, we like him, we think he might be doing some smuggling, so we'll let his go through. You know, type of, if we're not crooked behind the scenes, we would at least know the magnitude of the problem within a year easily. Maybe even in 2 weeks we'll know the magnitude to know whether we need to inspect more or less, or the it's a 5%, you know, smuggle list, or 2%, we're never going to get it zero, We're going to try and keep it under 5 or under 2. I think if we wanted to and we used our head, we could get a handle around it very, very rapidly. But they never do. Hmm. I mean, am I being too accusical here by my attorney over there, Brennan?
Yes, I think you are. I don't think it would be that easy to do what you're thinking. I think there are many other ways around that. Because I don't think, for example, I think if you're just doing spot check and...
It's not a spot check. A random sample is a lot different than a spot check.
Okay. But I think the concept is still the same, that you're looking at a very small number of containers that come in, unless every container is completely filled with contraband, you're not going to really find it.
Well, I'm saying we're going to take 5 out of 2,000 apart and open mm-hmm. up every crate. And in 20 of them, we're going to give them a glance. And because right now, what do we do? We wait for a complaint? We wait for what? You know, I mean.
Well, I don't know how they're done now. They might be doing the same thing right now that you're talking about. It may be just a random selection.
Well, I'm saying
based on who the shipper is and what's.
But in order to do that, you have to actually do what I'm saying. You got mm-hmm. to make it random, and you got to look at that particular container.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're that rigorous. I
don't think that the inspections are that rigorous either. Right now, I don't think that, as Jeff pointed out, I don't think there's the manpower to do it that rigorously.
Well, mm-hmm. I mean,
and if you're gonna, you know, it seems logical to me that if you're going to hide something that should not be brought into the country, you're going to put it at the back of the container. You're not going to put it right inside the door. So that bodes well for your inspection techniques where you take 5 containers and you take everything out and put everything back in. But for the most part, I think, you know, the level 1 or the level 2 inspection, that as I'm interpreting yours, you may go a quarter of the way into the container. You're not going to go all the way to the back to find out what's going to be there. I just don't think that there's the manpower to do it.
Whenever this is what tainted my feeble brain. Somewhere in college, I don't know what professor it was, sent something in front of us that had to do with a regulatory agency at the time. I see Jeff smiling over there. He knows where I'm going with this. And they took apart the, you know, Brendan's group. He's supposed to inspect whatever
mm-hmm.
drive license plates on cars. And they'll say, okay, well, to really inspect a license plate on the 5 million cars in the state, Brennan's group would need, you know, 300 people, and he's got 30. So clearly, if you want him to inspect every license in the state, he doesn't have the manpower. But then they went on to say, here's the 30 people. This guy hasn't looked at one in 2 weeks. This guy, I mean, you went through the people doing essentially mm-hmm. nothing.
Right.
Except walking around telling people how they don't have the people to do the job properly, so they don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it ends up being a cluster bleep, you know, to where, I mean, like, you know, it's instead of saying, okay, you should have 300 people, you've got 30, well, at least you're doing 10% of the job. No, they don't do 10% of the job. They do no percent of the job because they can't do all the job, and they only just tell people they can't. So in other words, you end up in no man's land. You're not saying, well, let's stop every 10th car. Or we're not stop them, but you know what I'm saying? Let's check every 10th car. Well, they don't do that. But they have the manpower to do that, but they don't do that either. So we're talking about people who will tell you they don't do anything because they don't have enough manpower. I mean, look at the SEC. Every time they miss something, they don't have manpower. Well, what are the people there doing all day? I bet if you went through the office, you'd say, by the way, what are you doing today? I don't know. I mean, am I right, Jeff, or not?
I mean, well, I think that's true to an extent, but I don't think it's the total amount of the problem. I think, in your example, the 30 people who work for the agency, I don't think all 30 of them are not doing anything. I think you may have a couple of people who are out trying to get more money to support the system. And instead of 30 people, you may have 10 or 15 that are actually doing the inspection. I don't think it's that all of them are not doing the inspection. It is a manpower issue, but I think not quite as dramatic as you're making it out to be.
Well, I mean, I would say that everybody who's traded as long as I have can point to incredible instances of insider trading. Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Even stuff like you'll see on the stuff goes on here. I mean, from Washington, from China. In the last year, I've never seen more. You know, China does something and spoos are up 40. And I sit here and watch things move. Well, when was it, Jeff? Last summer we were moving all over the place on this. I sit here and watch the spoos go 20 points. I go, well, something happened. Obviously, somebody's getting the news faster than anybody mm-hmm. else. Now, if you went to the SEC, the first story you're going to get is we don't have enough manpower. I mean, but so does that mean you do nothing?
Well, you know, I know some people who work for the SEC.
Well, I'm not saying they're all slumps. I mean,
and it's not a question of that they're sitting at their desk waiting for retirement. A lot of them are doing a very diligent job.
Yeah, it was surfing porn, wasn't it?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah. But they are hard work, but there are too many cases that come across that could be possibly investigated. So it is, a lot of it is random for insider trading or whatever the violations are.
The people at the...
And it also depends on where, like in the case of government entities, what's the direction from the top of the organization, whether it's... you know, the D.C. office who's head of the whole department, or whether it's the guy who's in California over the port, so Los Angeles and San Francisco. What is the directive that he or she is giving? What is the direction that's being given to him or her as far as how deep of a dive they should do and examine?
But that's an issue. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, no, I'll give you an interesting one to look at that's really under the radar that's China-related. And the SEC, maybe one of these days they'll look at this, but this is something that apparently is well known this is going on. So step back. Let's see if I can do this in 60 seconds. In China, there's this phenomena called ghost cities. There are about dozen cities the size of Philadelphia that are completely uninhabited. There are over 55 million units that are uninhabited, that are the result of recent construction. Beautiful cities that are completely empty.
Jeff, who built
this? This money came from U.S. investment, mm-hmm. for the most part. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when you invest in China, you cannot take your money out. And you're subject to Chinese valuation standards. So these units have been marked to market. They're held on the books at $100,000. The irony of that is the average Chinese Chinese worker makes $7,500 a year and could never afford these units. But they're sitting on the books with a value of $100,000 apiece. So U.S.-based hedge funds and private equity companies that charge a carried interest based on valuation are making their money off the valuation that everybody knows is a shell game, which is, it's just an absolutely incredible story. Those 60 million units that are uninhabited in China could house every American, you know, our 300 plus American could live in cities that are empty in China that exist only because of the valuation that allows us to mark books up at a higher rate for carried interest, and that money is locked in.
Well, there can't be any interest because where's the money coming from?
Well, based on the valuation, private valuation.
You're saying they're marking it. You have a, quote, capital gain when you really don't. But
that's
no,
correct.
But there's no rent income coming your way.
So if you want to, and you're familiar with ghost cities, but if you were to search up China ghost cities, you'll see these amazing photographs of massive empty cities with complete infrastructure, malls, museums, statues,
Jeff,
even
any,
landscaped.
Is there any difference
that are empty?
Here's a sign of a technical question. One thing I talk about all the time: if you Luckbox Bazillion Dollar Magazine, if you were to loan money to something like that through the system in China, okay. You say you can't pull your money out.
So you can't bring your money back here.
You have to reinvest
in China.
What if the developer came to you directly and you gave him a dollar-denominated loan? How does that? Is that just outside the system? That's just between you and him, or is that? And then you're just bleep out of luck if he doesn't give you the money. Or how does that work? I mean, it can't be the same way.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because a lot of the loans are dollar-denominated, euro dollar-denominated, right. And those are the ones I think will go first, if anything goes. And those are the ones I'm most worried about, because I don't think the Chinese government cares.
Yeah, well.
I mean,
they do care about business, though. You know, it is a rule that every public company in China, so, you know, Baidu, JD.com, Tencent, Alibaba, every public company in China, publicly traded company in China, has to have a member of the Communist Party on the board of directors.
Wow. So, just out of curiosity, I don't know if you know the answer. It's like if you and I walked into one of these buildings and we turned on the heat or the water, would they be working, or is it they just sort of, are they totally tricked out with everything working, or are they, I mean?
Don't know, but they are unoccupied.
Yeah, I wonder why would you go so far as put like faucets and stuff if nobody's there? But I've seen pictures of those. It's weird looking at the streets. It looks like a neutron bomb went off.
Yeah, they're amazing. Very dystopian.
So what do you, we only got a minute or so. Do you, As my advice, I'll finally get to you, and Brendan, is I think you want to keep your current positions, but I think you got to have some kind of protection. I mean, I keep nudging the puts up. We've got gold for a lot of people, or every time the thing's up a buck, we roll the puts up a buck. So we're trying to lock in as we go, which obviously costs you a little bit of money. But even I've noticed in the last 3 days, virtually all the rally has been in the narrow stuff. It's Amazon, it's Microsoft, it's Apple. This narrowness always frightens me, guys. I mean, should it?
A sector rotation? I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's the same five stocks sure. going up.
It is, right. I mean, well, you know, Amazon finally broke out. They were kind of, they had a double high that they just broke through that, you know, so maybe there's a little internal Fang rotation, if you want to call it that. But you're right, it's
the When's the new magazine due out? It sounds like a good one.
Well, we're waiting on our next issue we'll get later on this week. That's called the Fake Issue. It looks at augmented reality, fake news, deep fake, and all those things.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, that comes out
so
in a couple
China
days.
So the China stuff is the next one?
Yes.
Okay. Well, sounds like we got to look forward to it, too. All right. SP Futures down 4.25. Thank you, guys. It was fun today. NASDAQ Futures up 10 only. We'll be right back tomorrow morning. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.